Miss Drew was struggling to inspire her class with enthusiasm for Tennyson's Idylls of the King. "A knight," she said, "a knight was a person who spent his time going round succouring the oppressed."
"Sucking what?" said William, bewildered.
"Succouring, William, means to help. He spent his time helping anyone who was in trouble."
"How much did he get for it?" asked William.
"Well, nothing, of course," said Miss Drew. "He helped the poor because he loved them, William. He had a lot of adventures and fighting, and he helped beautiful, persecuted damsels."
William's respect for the knight rose.
"Of course," said Miss Drew, "they needn't necessarily be beautiful, but in most of the stories we have, they were beautiful."
There followed some stories of fighting and adventure and the rescuing of beautiful damsels.
The idea of the thing began to take hold of William's imagination.
"I say," he said to his chum Ginger after school, just before they were due to stay behind for extra maths, "that knight thing sounds all right. Sucking, well, I mean helping people and fighting and all that. I wouldn't mind doing it this afternoon, instead of extra coaching. And you could be my squire."
"Yes," said Ginger slowly. "I'd thought of doing it too, but I thought of you being the squire."
"Well," said William, "let's be squires in turn. You first," he added hastily.
"What'll you give me if I'm first?"
William considered. "I'll give you first drink out of a bottle of ginger beer what I'm going to get with my next money. It'll be 3 weeks off, because they're taking the next 2 weeks to pay for a window what my ball slipped into by mistake."
"All right," said Ginger.
"I won't forget about the ginger beer."
"No, you won't," said Ginger. "I'll remind you, all right. Well, let's set off."
"Of course," said William, "it would be nicer with armour and horses and trumpets, but I expect folks would think anyone a bit soft what went about in the streets in armour now. Because these times is different." "Well, she said so. But she said we could still be knights and sucker people, didn't she? Anyway, I'll get my bugle. That'll be something." William's bugle had just returned to public life after one of its periodic terms of retirement into his father's keeping. William took his bugle proudly in one hand and his water pistol in the other, and bravely denying themselves the pleasures of extra maths, off the two set upon the road of romance and adventure.
"I'll carry the bugle," said Ginger, "'cause I'm squire."
William was loath to give up his treasure. "Well, I'll carry it now," he said, "but when I begin fighting folks, I'll give it to you to hold." They walked along for about a mile without meeting anyone. "I wonder what knights eat," said William at last. "I'm getting so's I wouldn't mind something to eat."
"We didn't ought to have set off before tea," said the squire, with after-the-event wisdom. "We ought to have waited till after tea."
"You ought to have brought something," said William severely. "You're the squire. You're not much of a squire not to have brought something for me to eat."
"And me," put in Ginger. "If I brought any, I'd have brought it for me more than for you."
William fingered his pistol. "If we meet any wild animals," he said darkly. A cow gazed at them mournfully over a hedge. "You might go milk that," suggested William. "Milk would be better than nothing."
"Well, you go milk it."
"No, I'm not squire. I bet squires did the milking. Knights wouldn't have done the milking."
"I'll remember," said Ginger, "when you're squire, all the things what you said a squire ought to do when I was squire."
They entered the field and gazed at the cow from a respectful distance. She turned her eyes upon them sadly. "Go on," said the knight to his reluctant squire.
"I'm not good at cows."
"Well, I will then," said William with reckless bravado, and advanced boldly upon the animal. The animal very slightly lowered its horns, perhaps in sign of greeting, and emitted a sonorous moo. Like lightning, the gallant pair made for the road. "Anyway," said William, "we've got nothing to put it in, so we'd only have got tossed for nothing, perhaps, if we'd gone on." They walked on down the road till they came to a pair of iron gates and a drive that led up to a big house.
William's spirits rose. His hunger was forgotten.
Come on, he said. We might find someone to rescue here. It looks like a place where there might be someone to rescue.
Unchallenged, they went up to the house.
While the knight was wondering whether to blow his bugle at the front door or by the open window, they caught sight suddenly of a vision inside the window. It was a girl as fair and slim and beautiful as any wandering knight could desire, and she was speaking fast and passionately. William, ready for all contingencies, marshalled his forces.
"Follow me,"
he whispered, and crept on all fours nearer the window. They could see a man now, an elderly man with white hair and a white beard.
"And how long will you keep me in this vile prison?"
the girl was saying in a voice that trembled with anger.
"Base wretch that you are!"
"Crumbs!"
"Ha-ha!" sneered the man. "I have you in my power. I will keep you here a prisoner till you sign the paper which will make me master of all your wealth. And beware, girl, if you do not sign, you may answer for it with your life."
"Collie," murmured William. Then he crawled away into the bushes, followed by his attendant squire.
"Well," said William, his face purple with excitement, "we've found someone to rescue, all right. He's a base wretch, like what she said.
Will you kill him?" said the awed squire.
How big was he? Could you see?"
said William the discreet.
"He was ever so big. Great big face he had, too, with a beard."
"Well, then I won't try killing him, not straight off. I'll think of some plan, something cunning."
He sat with his chin on his hands, gazing into space, till they were surprised by the opening of the front door and the appearance of the elderly white-bearded man. William quivered with excitement. The man went along a path through the bushes. William and Ginger followed on all fours with elaborate caution. The path ended at a small shed with a locked door. The man opened the door. The key stood in the lock, and entered.
Promptly, William, with a snarl expressive of cunning and triumph, hurled himself at the door and turned the key in the lock.
"Here!" came an angry shout from inside. "Who's that? What the devil?"
"You low old caitiff," said William through the keyhole.
"Who the deuce?" exploded the voice.
"You base wretch, like what she said you was," bawled William, his mouth still applied closely to the keyhole.
"Let me out at once, or I'll—"
"You mean old oppressor.
Who the deuce are you? Oh, what's the tomfool trick? Let me out, do you hear?"
A resounding kick shook the door.
"I've got a pistol," said William sternly. "I'll shoot you dead if you kick the door down, you mangy old beast."
The sound of kicking ceased, and a scrambling and scraping, accompanied by oaths, proceeded from the interior.
"Right," said William. "You stay on guard, and I'll go and set her free. I'll blow the bugle at the front door. Then they'll know something's happening."
Miss Priscilla Green was pouring out tea in the drawing room. Two young men and an older lady were the recipients of her hospitality.
"Father will be here in a minute," she said. "He's just gone to the dark room to see some photos he's left in toning or fixing or something. We'll get on with the rehearsal as soon as he comes. We just rehearsed the scene he and I have together, so we're ready for the ones where we all come in."
"How did it go, Priscilla?" asked the older lady.
"Oh, quite well. We knew our parts anyway."
"I think the village will enjoy it. Anyway, it's never very critical, is it? And it loves a melodrama."
"Yes. I wonder if Father knows you're here. He said he'd come straight back. Perhaps I'd better go and find him."
"Oh, I say, let me go, Miss Green," said one of the youths ardently.
"Well, it's a shed in the garden that he uses. We use it half as a darkroom and half as a coal cellar.
I'll go.
He stopped. A nightmare sound, as discordant as it was ear-splitting, filled the room. Miss Green sank back into her chair, suddenly white. The other young man let a cup of tea fall neatly from his fingers onto the floor, and there crash into fragments. The older lady visitor emitted a scream that would have done credit to a factory siren. Then, At the open French window appeared a small, scruffy-looking boy holding a bugle, purple-faced with the effort of his performance. One of the young men was the first to recover speech. He stepped away from the broken crockery on the floor, as if to disclaim all responsibility for it, and said sternly, "Did you make that horrible noise?" Miss Green began to laugh hysterically.
"Do have some tea in. Now you've come," she said to William.
William remembered the pangs of hunger, of which excitement had momentarily rendered him oblivious, and, deciding there was no time like the present, stepped into the room, took a cake from the stand, and began to consume it in silence.
"You'd better be careful," said the older lady to her hostess. He might have escaped from the asylum. He looks mad. He had a very mad look, I thought, when he was standing at the window.
He's evidently hungry. Anyway, I can't think why Father doesn't come."
Here, William, fortified by a walnut bun, remembered his mission.
It's all right now," he said. "You can go home. He's shut up. Me and Ginger shut him up."
"You see," said the older lady, with a meaning glance around, "I said he was from the asylum. He looked mad. We'd better humour him and ring up the asylum. Have another cake, darling boy."
Nothing loath, William selected an ornate pyramid of icing. At this point, there came a bellowing and crashing and tramping outside, and Miss Priscilla's father, roaring fury and threats of vengeance, hurled himself into the room. Miss Priscilla's father had made his escape by a small window at the other end of the shed. To do this, he had had to climb over the coals in the dark. His face and hands and clothes and once white beard were covered with coal. His eyes gleamed whitely.
"An abominable attack! Utterly unprovoked, dastardly ruffians!"
Here he stopped to splutter because his mouth was full of coal dust. While he was spluttering, Ginger, who had just discovered that his bird had flown, appeared at the French window.
"He's got out! Look at him! He's got out, and all our trouble, sucker in and rescue him for nothing. Why didn't someone stop him getting out?"
That evening, William and Ginger sat on the stile that led to the field at the end of William's Road.
"It's not really much fun being a knight," said William.
"No," agreed Ginger. "You never quite know when folks is oppressed. And anyway, what's one afternoon away from extra coaching to make such a fuss about?"
"Seems to me, from what Father said," went on William, "you'll have to wait a jolly long time for that drink of ginger beer."
An expression of dejection came over Ginger's face.
"And he wasn't even ever squire," he said.
But William brightened.
"They were jolly good cakes, though," weren't they?